Hi, I'm Mike Richmond of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs with this message for veterans. If you're a veteran having thoughts of suicide or know of a veteran at risk for taking their own life, call the new Veterans Crisis Line number, 988, then press 1. It's available 24/7. This shorter, three-digit number provides an easier-to-remember way to access the Veterans Crisis Line, which links to over 500 VA suicide prevention coordinators. Suicide prevention is VA's top clinical priority, and in the words of VA Secretary Dennis McDonough, during a crisis, every second counts. This new number, he says, makes it easier for veterans and those who care about them to reach life-saving support without having to be enrolled in VA benefits or health care. For more information, go to veteranscrisisline.net. That's veteranscrisisline.net. I'm Mike Richmond.
We all owe them, but very few of us know them. They are the men and women of our military and first responder communities. And these are their stories. American Warrior Radio is on the air.
Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. You're tuned in to American Warrior Radio. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. A special welcome to listeners joining us on our two new affiliates, WFIN 95.5 FM 1330 AM in Findlay, Ohio, and WNKN 105.9 FM, The Oasis, serving the Middleton, Dayton, and Cincinnati markets. Wonderful to have you joining us. We hope to see you back every week. One of the joys of being a radio host is being introduced to a whole bunch of interesting people from a very diverse set of backgrounds. One thing they all have in common, though, is they all have a story to tell. Joining us today on American Warrior Radio to tell his story is a fellow who's been a Marine, an Air Force fighter pilot, a teacher, an author, and a minister. He flew combat in Vietnam and was awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross and 13 Air Medals. Welcome to American Warrior Radio, Mr. Daryl Aarons.
Thank you for inviting me. Glad to be here.
Daryl, it's a pleasure. Your book that attracted my attention is called Turn and Burn, A Fighter Pilot's Memories and Confessions. But there's another layer of depth to your story, and that's the story, that's a lot of stories, of why you decided to record your memories. Tell us about your great-grandfather.
Well, my son and daughter were after me for quite a while to write down some memories for family history, and I neglected to do that. I put off doing that. And then one time when I was on leave on my way to an assignment in Spain, I stopped in Nebraska to visit my mother, and we were invited to my cousin's house on the farm for dinner. And while waiting there, I picked up a book that was on the table next to where I was sitting, and it was a history of that county, Platte County, Nebraska. And I paged through it, and it had paragraphs of the movers and shakers, you know, over the years in that county. And usually everybody had a paragraph, a few paragraphs. And then I came to this one individual. There are two or three pages devoted to him. And I read that, and I was really impressed. He joined the Union Army when he was about 17 years old. When the Civil War broke out, he fought in some of the major battles, Antietam and others, was wounded twice. Afterwards, after the war, he moved to Nebraska and saved his money and little by little bought land and became one of the main individuals there in that county as far as developing it. And as I read on, I was really impressed. And I asked my aunt, I said, who is this guy? Do you know him? Does anybody know him? And she looked at me with a strange look, and she said, "Why, Daryl, he's your great-grandfather." And I never knew that. And I asked him, why hasn't anybody told me about this guy? And they kind of looked at me with a questioning look, like, you know, why would they? But anyway, I asked where he was buried, and he was buried in a small Christian cemetery close to where we were. So the next Sunday after church, I and two of my aunts went there, and I visited his grave. And I thought at that time, I sure wished that he would have left some documentation you know, for me to read some, you know, story of his exploits or whatever, so that I could know him better, because I would really like to have known him. So I decided to write my account of my exploits for my kids.
You know, Daryl, that really touched me, because my folks are missionaries, and they spent a couple of years over in Prague. And during that time, we were separated, and me and my brothers were all adults by then, obviously. But during that time, they wrote a book about their lives before we kids came along, and they had it bound, and they gave it to us as a Christmas present. And to this day, that's still one of my favorite presents, because, you know, you spend your whole life with your parents or someone, and there's so much you still don't know about them. So congratulations on doing that, and maybe our show today will inspire other folks to do it, even though they maybe didn't have as adventurous a life as you did.
Your folks are very wise in doing that. Like I put in there, today we seem to have lost account of the great importance of family and family history, and knowing that, in knowing our family history, we know ourselves better, and that's really, really important, and that's something we seem to have lost to a great deal.
Well, I'll tell you, your history, Daryl, is one of, I don't know if you want to call it divine intervention, or just it's better to be lucky than good, but man, I read your book, and you had so many narrow escapes. Let me back up a little bit. Your call sign, Curly, is there a story behind that, or is it a story that's family friendly and can be shared? If not, it's okay. I understand.
No, there's a story behind that. When I was based in Spain, the word came out all fighter pilots had to have a call sign, a tactical call sign. Well, I was gone at the time. I was delivering a fighter jet to a squadron in Germany, and at the time, I was just assistant operations officer for that wing. And I was gone, and the names had to be in by the next day or so. So the question came up, what about Daryl? You know, he's not here. And the commander, the wing commander, he said, I know the call sign for Daryl, Curly. That's because I'm bald. and so that went in. When I got back, he told me what he had done. He said, if you don't like it, I'll see what we can do to change it. And I thought about it, and I thought, no, I kind of like that. I'll keep it.
Well, that's an interesting story. Yeah, I've heard some other ones that we can't share on the radio, but that's pretty good. Now, explain about just a couple of minutes for the first break, Daryl, but from Marines to the Air Force, how does that work?
When I was in college, had a year and a half of college behind me. I was doing well. Grades were good. I just got bored. Me and another guy decided to join the Marines for a little excitement. And one of the reasons I went in, because I had heard that the Marines needed fighter pilots, and it was easier to get a training slot in the Marines than in the Air Force or Navy. And my boyhood dream since I was 5 years old was to be a fighter pilot. So that's why I joined the Marines. Another reason is because I was pretty small and spindly. I weighed about 125 pounds, and a few of my cousins and that had been in the Marines. And when I mentioned that I might join the Marines, I was told, no, you'll never make it. You're too small. You're too spindly. You're not all the rest. So I joined just to show them, hey, yeah, I can. So anyway. That's why I went in the Marines. I did a tour in the Marines, did well. They wanted me to reenlist. The gunny sergeant called me in and said, Aaron, you've been a good Marine. I'd like you to reenlist. We see here that you signed up for NAVCAD for pilot training. You took the tests, passed them. Reenlist, and we'll see what we can do to get you to Pensacola. And I told him, gunny, give me orders to Pensacola, then I'll reenlist. He said, no. You got to reenlist first. So that was the end of that. I took my honorable discharge and left the Marines.
But you did this in the middle. Was Vietnam was going on at the time?
No, not at that time. That was, I hate to even give the date. That was 58.
Okay. Okay. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Darrell Ahrens. He's a Vietnam fighter pilot, was awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross and 13 air medals. He's got a book out called Turn and Burn, A Fighter Pilot's Memories and Confessions. And it's a great read. It's an easy read. And both Darrell and I encourage any of you out there listening to, you know, think about writing down your stories, too, for your family and future generations, because not only is it very educational for those of us who aren't your relatives, but it's just it's history. And we can't, if we forget history, we're bound to repeat it. You can find this podcast and over 500 others at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Check us out on your favorite streaming platform. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Darrell Ahrens. He's retired as Lieutenant Colonel in the United States Air Force, flew combat in Vietnam. He's got a great book out called Turn and Burn, A Fighter Pilot's Memories and Confessions. Darrell, one thing I really enjoyed about your book is you dedicate a lot of time to some of the stories of your training. And, you know, this show is really to educate and inform those who never served. And one point I like to emphasize, it's a darn dangerous business, even when someone's not shooting at you. And I enjoy that you dedicated a number of those chapters. And the first thing that came out at me, Darrell, was what a very diverse group of classmates you had, and the fact that the military is one of the greatest melting pots in the world.
That's exactly right. The the military, in your military experience, you get so many things. You get intimate acquaintance with so many different people, different lifestyles, different experiences and all. I can't think of anything that gives you a better experience than that than the military. But yeah, we had some pretty strange some characters in my pilot training class.
Well, and that's just sort of the nature of fighter pilots, isn't it, Darrell? I mean, it takes a certain personality to even want to enter the training.
Well, like the story goes, there's a book out that's entitled Fighter Pilots that has comments by all kinds of fighter pilots from World War One to World War Two to all through. But one of the main things they mention, a quality absolutely essential, is aggressiveness. They say you can have all the other qualities, you know, quick reflexes, good eyesight, this and that and the other thing, but without aggressiveness, you're just not going to do it. You're not going to make it. And maybe I shouldn't say this, but you kind of have to have a aptitude for pushing the limits a bit.
Sure. I tell you, one of my favorite historical fighter pilots was a young man by the name of Ralph, the Kid Hoffer, who flew with the 4th Fighter Group in World War II. And he, when the mission was over and the mission was complete, if he still had fuel and ammunition, he went out looking for Germans. So speaking of call signs, your call sign is Curly, but it was almost wrong way errands. That's a cute story. I mean, you were being aggressive. You're trying to impress your trainer, and that didn't work out so well, huh?
First flight in training, they said, be at the aircraft before your instructor. Have the airplane pre-flighted, ready to go when your instructor gets there. So I was gonna really impress him with that. So I left early, went out to the flight line, called the flight line taxi, flight line vehicle to go to my airplane. Sitting there really feeling proud of myself, then realized I caught the flight taxi going the wrong way. Jet was at the opposite end of the runway, and the flight taxi got to the end of the runway, stopped, and I expected him to turn around and head back, and he got out of the truck. I said, wait, what are you doing? He said, my shift's over. The next shift driver will be here in a little bit. I said, but I got to get to my airplane. It's at the other end of the runway. I said, how about please take me there? He said, no, can't do that. So there I am, sitting there in my big plan of being all that early and really impressing my instructor, going down the toilet. So I got out of there with that heavy parachute on my back, ran. That's all the way to the end of the runway. And the runway is, what, 10,000 feet long, or the taxiway. Ran all that way with that parachute bumping against my rear end to the airplane. And I got to the airplane, and my instructor was standing there tapping his fingers on the wing, you know, waiting, wondering where his errant student was. And I got there, and he said, Aaron's, get in. I've already pre-flighted, checked the forms and everything. We're running late. And get in. So I did. After the flight went well, he was pleased. But after he said, where in the blazes were you? And I made up some story while I was checking my personal equipment, you know, my parachute and all the rest of that. And he said, you know, it's fine to check it over, give it a good check. But you're not buying it. He said, he said, from now on, get to the airplane on time. And yes, sir.
The guy driving the truck, Darrell, was he a civilian? If he was in the military, couldn't you have just ordered him to do it, or doesn't work that way?
He just refused to do it. And I told him my dilemma, but he, you know, but anyway, made an interesting introduction to my first flight in a jet.
Well, and Curly is a much cooler call sign than Wrong Way. I think
yeah.
You dodged him.
There you go.
This is not a fair question, but I'm going to ask it anyway because it's sort of like asking a parent who their favorite child is. You flew 5 different aircraft in your time in the Air Force. Was there one that you preferred over the other, or did it depend on the mission? I mean, the T-38 seemed like just a joy to fly.
Yeah, well, I flew 7.
Oh, 7, okay.
The T-37, T-38 in pilot training, and then 5 fighters. That is a difficult question. The most impressive one I probably flew was the F-105. I mean, that airplane was so impressive. It scared you just walking up to it. It was so intimidating. And low altitude, the airplane would go. The airplane had such speed that it did. One of the pilots I knew just wanted to find out how fast you'd go at low altitude. So at about 500 feet or so, he ran it up. He was passing 850 knots, and it was still accelerating. And he got so scared that he stopped. He pulled up. But anyway, that was probably the most impressive one and the most comfortable one I flew.
Hmm.
The F-4 was, the Phantom was probably the best as far as all around, air to ground and air to air, all of that. The F-105 was best for air to ground, but the Phantom was for air to air and air to ground the best. And it was the fastest, and with the late modifications on it, it could maneuver pretty well, too. The F-102 is just a delight to fly. Light on the controls, and you got into a hassle with another airplane, you could put a first turn on him. That would throw him outside his arc.
Darrell, I tell you what, we need to take another break. We come back. I want to explore some more things about those planes because I learned something very interesting about the F-105 that I didn't know about when I read your book, and we'll talk a little bit more about the F-4 Phantom too. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Ben Bueller Garcia, right here on American Warrior Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're speaking with Darrell Ahrens. He's a retired lieutenant colonel in the Air Force, flew combat in Vietnam. Daryl, before we took the break, we're talking a little bit about some of the aircraft you flew, seven aircraft total. The F-105, the Thud, nicknamed the Thud, I didn't realize that, but that was had something unusual as a fighter plane. It actually had a bomb bay. You don't see those on fighters very often.
Yeah, well, the 105 was originally designed. Its primary mission was low altitude, high speed ingress to a target and drop a nuclear weapon. And putting a bomb bay inside of it to carry the weapon, of course, reduced drag. And that's one reason why it was so fast. You look at the airplane from the front, and it's so aerodynamic. But yeah, it did have a bomb bay, which really came in handy, though, in Vietnam for range, because instead of carrying a bomb, they used it as a fuel tank and filled it with gas. So it gave us another, I forget the amount, but another 200 or 300 and some gallons. So that worked out pretty well.
Now, why on earth, I know you talked about pilots having to be aggressive, and you were certainly that, and adventurous as a young man, but why on earth would a pilot get excited about flying a plane nicknamed the Widowmaker?
Good question. Why? A couple of reasons. Because it was formidable, because it was challenging. Fighter pilots like that. It entailed going to the limits, probably. And that's what a fighter pilot does. So, yeah, it's a challenge. And fighter pilots are very, very, very competitive.
So we're talking about the F-100, correct?
Yeah, the F-100.
Okay.
The F-100, when it first came in, was this deeply swept back wings and all the rest, entailed a different landing technique than other fighters. Even the F-86, which had swept wings, you know, you kind of landed a lot like a normal airplane. But the F-100, you had to have a high angle of attack, high speed approach. And if you tried to land like a normal airplane, you come and you would dive, and then as you approach the one way, you raise the nose, you know, and land it that way, you're going to crash and die. So it did present a challenge. A lot of pilots had a problem initially with changing their routine for landing. When we went to F-100 school, the first thing they did was showed us a film, and it was called the Saber Dance, and it showed a pilot landing an F-100, and he got too high of an angle of attack, got too slow on final, and he put himself into a position that they called behind the power curve. In other words, he was in a position to where he was stalling the airplane out, but he was in a position to where all the thrust that he had in that engine, all 16,000 pounds of it, was not going to recover him. He couldn't lower the nose or he'd crash. He couldn't raise the nose or he'd go into the full stall. And in other words, there was no way. He knew he was a dead man. There was no way he could recover. And he did. Finally, the airplane rolled over on its side and crashed in a huge fireball. And I remember the instructor, after the film, he looked at us and he said, "Gentlemen, don't do that."
Like that needed to be said?
Yeah, like it needed to be said.
So, Daryl, we've got, you know, your book is called The Fighter Pilot's Memories and Confessions. Maybe this is because you're a minister, but there's a whole lot of confessions in this book.
Yeah, there are.
Some things that Curly did. I'm trying to, you know, I want folks to read the book, tell us about, we've got about 4.5 minutes. Tell us about your unauthorized air show.
Oh, boy.
I mean, that's something right out of MASH.
This was, I hope there's a statute of limitations on this. I'm sure there is. Anyway, the request, I was based in Bitburg, Germany at the time, in F4E, Squadron 525th Bovloads. A request came down from the Danish Air Force to participate in their 25th anniversary celebration. And they were requesting that we send a couple of F4Es out of Bitburg, one to Tursup and one to Aalborg. The request went to USAFE headquarters. The request came down to us at Bitburg. And we assumed, and headquarters assumed, it was just for a static display, you know, where the airplane is parked on the ramp, people come around, pilot explains it, and all the rest of that. But there's no flying involved, because that's what it usually is. So we take the two airplanes. I was flight lead, and I dropped my partner off at Tursup. He landed. When he was on the ground, I went on to Aalborg. Well, we landed and met by a Danish lieutenant there. It says a Danish colonel, operations colonel, wants a meeting of all NATO pilots in the ready room. So we went, and there were about eight different NATO air forces involved, eight different NATO pilots in the room. The Danish colonel gets up, and the first thing he says, okay, the first aircraft to take off for the air show tomorrow will be the F4E out of Bitburg. And I'm thinking, wait, what? And he goes, all what's going to be involved in it, what we do. He said, every other aircraft will take off in 3-minute separation. Each aircraft, you fly a low level around Denmark. You'll make a high-speed pass across the airport at Copenhagen, a high-speed pass across the airport at Air Base at Tursup. Then you come back to Aalborg. You make a high-speed pass, do a 360, make a slow-speed pass, pitch up, and then land. But you have to do all that within 3 minutes, because the next aircraft is going to be 3 minutes behind you. Then when he finishes, he says to me, you know, since I'm the first aircraft, can you do that? Well, there's no way on God's earth I was going to stand up in a room with pilots from eight different NATO nations and say, well, sir, I have to check with my headquarters to get permission.
Mm-hmm.
Because none of the other pilots had to do that. I said, yes, sir.
Daryl, hold that thought, because I want to come back and finish up the story about how you pulled that off. I mean, there's so many things, Daryl, in your career that you maybe could have lost your wings for. And your book is replete with them, and this is one of them. But you, like I said, it sort of reminded me of the series MASH, where they found ways around things, and you did a great job of that. I want you to finish telling the rest of that story when we come back, and then I'd like to talk a little bit about your combat experience, and if you're able to, sir, if you could share with us the mission for which you were awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross, I'd appreciate that. If you don't want to talk about it, I get that too. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Lieutenant Colonel Daryl Ahrens, combat pilot, Vietnam, flew 7 different aircraft throughout the course of his career. Stick around. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Daryl Ahrens. He's got a great book out called Turn and Burn, A Fighter Pilot's Memories and Confessions, and we're talking a little bit about some of those confessions Daryl, when we took the break, you have got an aircraft. You weren't authorized to fly in the air show. You were just authorized to take the plane there and have it sit on the tarmac, but you also weren't going to say no to a colonel and with all those other fighter pilots around you. So tell us the way you worked it out, if you don't mind.
Well, the way we worked it out, when we left that briefing, my backseater, my weapon systems officer, was just about to come unglued. He said, "We can lose our wings over this." And I told him, "Be quiet, let me think." And so I come up, I called the command post back at base, back at Bitburg, and I told the controller on the command post, I said, "Okay, I want you to inform the deputy commander for operations of this. We're here at Aalborg, participating in the Danish Air Force's 25th anniversary. We thought it was just a static display, but they want me to fly. And I'm going to do that. But I've checked what they want, and it's okay. It's fine. It's well within my capability. There's no problem." So I said, "You let him know, but wait till he gets to work in the morning before you tell him. Don't call him at home. Wait till he gets to work in the morning." Well, I knew he'd get to work around 7:30. 7:30, I'd be in the cockpit because I was scheduled to take off at 8 o'clock. So anyway, so I made the controller repeat that he would wait till the morning to call him, and he did. So anyway, it all worked out. Flew the mission. It was great fun. That night, the Danish colonel took us all out to had the biggest steak I've ever had and washed down with Danish beer, and we flew back the next day. Landed at base. And I was immediately informed the squadron commander wanted to see me. And I walked in, and he said, "What the heck happened in Aalborg?" Apparently, what I hadn't counted on, that the Danish colonel who organized the whole thing would send messages. He sent a message to USAFE thanking them for their participation and saying, "Your pilot did an outstanding job in the air show." Well, the you-know-what hit the fan. Mm-hmm. Anyway, to make a long story short, there were two colonels up there at headquarters who could have gotten that message and acted on it. One of them would have not hesitated to recommend disciplinary action for me. The other one was a real fighter pilot, common sense guy, and he said, "It's our fault. We didn't staff the request properly. We didn't ask for all they wanted. And we put the captain in a bad position." So anyway, nothing came of it.
Fair enough.
Thanks
fair
to
enough.
Him.
Daryl, in your book, you describe one time where you were strafed an ammo dump, kind of shooting blind, just shooting into the trees, hoping you hit something. And boy, you sure did. Was that the mission for which you were awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross, or was it a different mission?
No, it was a different mission. On that mission, when that ammo dump blew up, it flipped me. I was just recovering from the pass. Flipped me on my back. And there I am looking down at the ground. And I quickly, full aileron, full upset rudder, recovered the jet. And I just got the nose above the horizon. I saw what flipped me over. The pressure from that explosion. The ammo dump, my wingman said it looked like a miniature nuclear bomb going off. But anyway, no, that wasn't. The mission out on the DFC out, let me tell you about my scariest mission. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we were, my wingman and I were called to support a rescue operation in a hot area in North Vietnam. And on the border of Laos. And an F-4 crew was shot down. They were on the ground. The enemy was closing in on them, moving in on them. They needed some support now, quickly. And my wingman and I, we had cannon and ammunition, but we had already expended our bombs on another target. But we did have cannon ammunition. And the controller, he said, "Fine. We need to put something on there to stop or at least delay them, you know, from reaching that air crew." So we went in. Now, strafing anti-aircraft sites was forbidden. But when it comes to a rescue operation, all the regulations and restrictions go out the window. So anyway, but the reason it's forbidden because those anti-aircraft sites can reach you before you can reach them, because their range is greater. And they had at that time, North Vietnamese had a Russian 23-millimeter system, which was multiple barrel rapid fire that could throw out an absolute hailstorm of lead. So we roll in and do our strafing and pull up, and that's what we encounter. We looked up, we were looked to the side, and it was solid red tracer lines of anti-aircraft shells. Usually the shells were, every fourth or fifth shell was coated with a substance that would burn, that would show where it was going, that the gunners could see where the shells were going. And it was just solid out there. We were in a hailstorm of flak. I expected any moment to hear thump, 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 airplane taking hits. But miraculously, we didn't. But anyway, we did that, and then he asked that we do another pass because airplanes with bombs were almost there. They would be there shortly, but they still needed to keep putting armament on those troops that were getting very close to the F-4 crew. So we did a second pass. But anyway, that was probably the scariest mission.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And yeah, people need to understand that for every tracer you see, there's probably five or six other rounds up in the air coming after you. So, Daryl, I tell you what, we're running down on time. I encourage folks to get your book. You're actually a self-published author. This is you published three books and a fourth on the way, correct?
Yes.
And they can find all those at Amazon. And, folks, ladies and gentlemen, the name of the book is Turn and Burn, A Fighter Pilot's Memories and Confessions. I really enjoyed it, and I think you will, too. Daryl, again, we've only got a couple minutes left. A, I hope that people hearing this show will be inspired to write down stories of their lives, too. Even if they don't want to publish it, just, do like my parents did. Just have it bound and give it to your kids for a gift. It's definitely one of my most treasured gifts ever. What other advice would you give for other people out there, Daryl, who might want to publish their memories, though?
There's a lot of different ways to publish it. A mainstream publisher is probably not going to pay any attention to you, but there are some real good, there are some not so good self-publishing companies, but there are some very good ones too, that where you can get a start that way. So I would say go ahead and do it. Take the chance and don't get discouraged. It's going to be easy to get discouraged, but don't let yourself be discouraged. Just keep pressing on. Get it out on the market. Can I make one more comment before we close?
Sure, we got about a minute.
One of the main things I emphasize too in the book is the bonding that takes place. All military outfits kind of have this, whether you're talking about the Rangers, the Green Berets, whatever. You're talking about that bonding. The fighter pilot community has that special bonding involved in it. Someone wrote a poem here a while back. A fighter pilot friend of mine sent me a copy of it, and it talked about when you retire and you hang up the wings and you put the flying suits in the closet, and talks about yet you never really hang up the wings and you never really get rid of the flying suits. You're always there because you never leave that behind. And the last line of that poem really struck me. The last line said, because we flew, we envy no man. I thought about that, and he's right. There's no man on earth I envy.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story, Daryl. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Ben Bueller Garcia. You've joined us here on American Warrior Radio. Tune in every week. You can find a podcast
over 500 at www.AmericanWarriorRadio.com or on your favorite streaming platform. Take care.
You've been listening to American Warrior Radio. Archived episodes may be found at AmericanWarriorRadio.com or your favorite podcast platform.